Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the Toy Department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, it is Tuesday Toy Department time. I am Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. I'm going to stand here in defiance of the short show jinx today. We're doing a short show because I think it's what both of us need.
Oh, yeah, I think that's right.
You can hear my man Kolsky over there. Still under the weather, huh?
The cough is actually atypical. I've not had much of a cough. I just feel awful. And no one has provided an explanation. And, oh, I don't think I even told you this. I don't know that I should be talking about this on the podcast, but beyond me now being sick for 2.5 weeks and my son having a mild fever for about the same amount of time, my wife spent a night in the hospital this weekend with her own problems. So it's just a freaking mess over here, man. It's not great. It's really not great.
Yeah, it sounds pretty not great.
Yeah, it's just like one of these things. I'm clearly sick. I can't sleep right. I'm sweating through 3 or 4 shirts a night and tossing and turning and just like walking through my days in a delirious haze. But I'm not necessarily sick enough to like stop doing everything, because if I did that, I don't know when I'd be able to start doing things again. It's just... Anyway, that's probably enough on my infirmity, but it's not great. It's not a great situation, and you're busy, so let's get in and out here.
I know, and I feel bad for just being busy.
Hey, look, busy like, is a thing too. You're the boss over there, man. You got stuff to do.
All right. I think we can, kind of shortcut this at least on my end by saying I hated just about everything this week. So
I'm only mildly surprised, I guess.
Can we start with, let's just start with the 30 for 30 for Al Davis, because I think that is a thing upon which we agree. And, I think we could probably get through fairly quickly. This is a rare time where I just backed out. Not entirely, obviously. I watched about 30 minutes of it. But I bailed on it I got a little taste on Twitter from you about where you're coming from. There's a device. Yeah. Let's just call this the Irishman of sports documentaries. There's a technological device that they use in this that I think both of us found to be really tough. Do you want to explain it?
I wish I could. I think most people know they... I watched a documentarian literally make the argument that the only way to tell a story about two incredibly interesting historical figures and their even more interesting grudge and battles against one another. I heard a man say the only way to tell that story is not, in fact, to talk to people who were there, is not, in fact, to simply use the copious amounts of video that cover this entire incident, but the only way to do it was for him to put words into the mouth of two dead men and bring them, quote, to life, end quote, with deep fake technology. And I have to tell you, going in, I was skeptical. And I could not have imagined what a travesty this was going to be. And the more I think about that approach, the more convinced I am that nobody who greenlit this, nobody who worked on this, nobody who had any decision-making power whatsoever about this coming out should ever be allowed to work in the sports media ever again.
Wow. All right.
It's literally offensive because all of this stuff is on video. These two men, Pete Rozelle and Al Davis, said everything they had to say, and it's all on tape. And you know what? There are dozens of living people who could have answered real questions for you with real information. And instead, you pompous piece of garbage, you thought that you could write it better?
Yeah.
Are you, in fact, a documentarian at all?
That's what I was going to say. I was just about to say, I'm going to disagree with you on the one point that this is a documentarian, because I think once you start digitally making up people and putting words into their mouth, you are not documenting anything anymore.
Except the problem is, this guy, and this is where I totally lose the thread, the guy who did this, the guy who made this travesty, is a documentary director. He's directed good 30 for 30s in the past. What on earth is he doing?
Yeah. And on top of that, like, it doesn't look great. And it doesn't add anything.
No. That's
all this.
Derek, it looks terrible.
It looks terrible. Yeah, you're right. I was a little mild there. And those scenes don't add anything.
Nothing.
Like, the interesting scenes are the scenes with the real footage. Like, what are we doing here? You just took a crap all over the documentary because you wanted to use this new toy, you know? And that's kind of why I brought up The Irishman, because it's very similar. Like, you spent all this money, you did all this thing that attracts all this attention and doesn't actually work in the context of the story. And it would have just been easier, just like The Irishman would have just been easier to find an actor to play young De Niro.
Yep.
Rather than digitally superimposing him. Like, this would have just been easier to just use the damn footage and interview people. You know, you got great footage. You got Brent freaking Musburger. Like, just talk to people, make a documentary. It's not that hard. Like, I don't get it.
And by the way, the actual living alive people they had in this, Brent Musburger, whose career should have ended a decade ago and was given a script to read. Obviously, he wasn't asked a single question. We see a young Brent Musburger in the original footage. We see him. He's there. He was there. You could have asked him questions about this. And instead, you gave him a stupid script to read about Las Vegas. And by the way, Mark Davis sounded scripted too. I can't prove that, but he sounded scripted. So. Yeah. Like, I cannot for the life of me understand what you were doing here. And honestly, I've seen a couple interviews with him, and it's made it worse. Because he just keeps saying, I just felt the only way to tell this story was for me to write it. Which is, it's so deeply conceited and offensive. I don't know.
And if that's true, you know, make the ESPN Films, you know, season on the break. You're right. Like, if the way you need to tell this story is to fictionalize it, then fictionalize it.
Right.
You
know? Give me a move. Then make a movie. Exactly.
Yeah.
Now it really was awful. And the biggest shame, and I did watch the whole thing, cause we also talked about it on the radio show. I watched the whole damn thing. And the really offensive part is, even without interviewing people, if you would just cut the deepfake stuff, this movie would have been a lot better. If you had just cut the deepfakes and let Brent Musburger voiceover sort of narrate it, that wouldn't have been great, but at least it wouldn't have been embarrassing. This was embarrassing, and I can't believe it came out. I can't believe ESPN let it come out. I can't believe the people in charge of 30 for 30 were willing to sully their entire reputation for this garbage. It's awful.
It's easily the worst 30 for 30 thing I've seen. And they've made a lot of 30 for 30s at this point. So.
They've made something like 100 of these, and this is so far and away the worst, it's unbelievable.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. It's going to be weird when they get to 300 30 for 30s.
Yeah, I mean, it's already weird.
You're right. It is kind of already weird. Like, how long ago was the 30th anniversary at this point?
I don't know, but Bill Simmons created this, and he hasn't been at ESPN for a long time.
It's true. I don't think anyone involved in the creation of it still works at ESPN.
Yeah, I don't know. Does Connor Schell still work there? I'm not sure.
I believe Connor Schell's gone now, yeah. Yeah. So, anyway, let's move on. I guess we're going to go to WandaVision next.
Yeah, so this is the thing I'm least – well, I mean, look, we both knew the Al Davis thing was terrible. So that's not a surprise. I'm least surprised that you didn't like WandaVision, although I am interested to hear what you thought, because while obviously you hate, not hate, you're generally not excited about superhero stuff, this is weirder than your average superhero thing, certainly. I guess, tell me if I'm wrong, my instinct is your problem is that although there's some interesting and weird stuff going on here, it all comes back to superhero nonsense.
Sort of. I mean, look, I wanted to watch this, right? It was my idea.
Yeah, I was already watching it.
Yeah, I figured you were. I had already, you know, I watched all of the ones that are out to this point. So I think it's, what, 5 episodes at this point?
Sounds right, yeah.
Is that right?
Yep. So you saw, like, the big reveal cameo at the end of episode 5.
Yes.
Which I'm sure you didn't care about at all.
Yeah. I mean, they're definitely, like, especially the further we go, there are references to movies I didn't watch and things I don't understand or even vaguely care about.
Right.
I guess I don't get a lot of that stuff. And I'd heard so many good things. Universally, I've heard this is good. I've heard it's different. I heard, don't worry about it if you're tired of superheroes. It's not that. And I guess I sort of get the impulse of that, but I don't think I get what's happening here on any level. Like, I understand they're sort of doing parody of, old television conventions, and that as time is shifting, the convention shifts, so that they're starting with, you know, these 50s and 60s Leave It to Beaver sort of things, and then eventually evolves into these kind of 80s sitcoms, and I'm sure they'll
probably get to Friends next. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I definitely could see, like, a Family Matters thing or whatever. But yeah, I
felt like this last episode felt like Silver Spoons to me. How do you like that?
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah. I don't find the parody, and the early episodes are pretty much just kind of parody before they really kind of getting, you know, parody with a little bit of extra magic power. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I guess. I don't. It's an interesting point, right? Because they're really doing two things here, and they're a little bit separate so far. Like, it's hard to understand how the parody relates to the heart of the story. I'm not sure that it does. It seems like, you know, we have a story about a heartbroken superhero who is spinning out of control, fundamentally, right? That's what this show is about at its core.
Right, creating an alternate reality.
Right, but what that alternate reality has to do with her emotions is unclear, and I guess I can see how that would be frustrating, especially if you don't care about the superhero part that's at the heart of it.
Right. So, and then as we go on, we're getting kind of more and more into that.
Right. We get more and more of what's actually happening. You know, the first couple episodes, like you said, are pretty much just the parody. And you're kind of like, what in the hell is going on here? That guy's supposed to be dead, and where are they?
Yeah, see, I'm not like that. Because I don't know that guy's supposed to be dead.
I think that's part of the problem.
They allude to it, yeah.
I think part of the problem here is, like, while this is different than your standard superhero fare, it does sort of depend on you being caught up.
Yeah, yeah. So, and I'm not at all caught up.
And I do think that's part of the trick of these sorts of swings by Marvel is, I think the pretense, and I don't mean that in a negative way, but, like, the stated goal probably of a series like this is to do something different with the superhero material, is to, like, make something that in theory would entertain a wider audience or a different audience or would be considered a higher level of art, maybe.
Yeah.
But if the only people who can watch it and understand it are people who've seen all the Marvel content, I'm not sure who that audience is other than the same Marvel people. And now, as someone who's watching all the Marvel stuff, I kind of cherish these weird swings because it's different. And I like the story at the heart of it, and I'm invested in the MCU in general. So these weird sort of, you know, if we're talking about taking swings, like this is a, it's an inside out, poke it down the right field line sort of swing. They're not swinging for a home run, right?
Right.
And I like to see that because I love baseball. But if you don't care about baseball, I'm not sure the distinction between homer and, you know, opposite field line drive means a lot to you.
Yeah, I get that. And look, I don't think it's unreasonable for them to make content that is designed for people who are real into the MCU, because that's a shitload of people, right?
And that's the other thing. Yeah,
that's
so
a big
many people.
Part of the whole draw, right, for Disney yeah. Plus as a concept, right, is we're going to put a bunch of Marvel stuff on TV to attract that audience,
yep.
you know?
And see if we can grow a TV audience similar yeah. to the movie audience. And that's, you know, I don't see why it wouldn't work, because this is interesting content.
I don't, it's not quite coming together for me yet. I will say, like, you know, they have cast a lot of people who I really like.
Yeah.
And like in other things, which was another reason why I was excited for it. But I don't know, like I really enjoy Elizabeth Olsen.
Me too.
But I don't know that I am enjoying her in this so much, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I would say the same is true for Kat Dennings.
Yeah, see, and I think that it just comes back to you not being invested in the MCU at all, because
yeah.
for me, someone who is invested and I think has enough of a fine taste to like distinguish between Kat Dennings and like some random person who's not that great, like I do cherish the Kat Dennings performance. I think she's great. I do really like Elizabeth Olsen in this. I think the woman playing I forget her for Rambo, whichever Rambo.
Rambo.
Yeah,
is she,
the daughter.
Is the Rambo name is intentional, I assume, right?
That's her daughter.
Okay. Yeah.
So the woman who is like friends with Captain Marvel. Did you watch Captain Marvel?
No.
Maybe you should. It's pretty good. But then again, we've just had this conversation, so you probably shouldn't. but yeah, so basically like Captain Marvel's best friend when she was just a lady is that woman's mother. And apparently that, you know, the mother founded this.
Yes, the sword. I got that. There's some references to the mom, right?
Yep.
Like they talk about the mom a little bit. Yep. I didn't get the Captain Marvel thing. But yeah, like I've, you know, we love Catherine Hahn on this podcast. I don't think I've ever enjoyed her less.
Really?
Than in this.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just like, I don't know that we're going to get past the superhero thing here, because I really think Catherine Hahn's performance is one of the best parts of this. She's so fun.
Her thing is pretty superhero unrelated, right? It's mostly just her like doing sitcom flop sweat.
Yes.
You know?
She's doing yeah. hilarious sitcom flop sweat. That's the perfect way to put it. And
yeah,
I think
yeah.
she's great for that.
Yeah. I mean, she's a pro. Don't get me wrong. I just think it's like, you know, they're asking her to play one note, and she's playing the fuck out of that one note.
Yes,
you know what
is.
I mean?
Yes,
right.
She is,
like,
man.
That's it. But it's like, you got Catherine Hahn, and you're like, and I recognize that it's quite possible that they might have more notes for her to play later on in the show, you know? So,
well, it's going to be interesting. I mean, I don't know how much longer this show goes. I think there's only one or two or three more episodes. Like, it's not going to be that long. So I am intrigued. And those
okay.
of you who do like the MCU stuff, I really think this is a good show.
Yeah, look, I'm fully prepared to say that this is just me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So my experiences may not apply to you, but I did enjoy it a ton. Let's jump over to Malcolm and Marie.
Hmm.
We're talking a lot about hate. Hate is maybe a strong word for how I feel about Malcolm and Marie. What I would say about Malcolm and Marie is we spent a lot of time in last week's pod dapping Sam Levinson and Zendaya and the entire cast of Euphoria.
Mm-hmm.
For how great that show is,
yep.
and how hard it is to pull off what they're doing.
Yep.
And I would say Malcolm and Marie is kind of maybe the example of how hard it is and what happens when when maybe you go off the path a little bit.
I'm very confused about how this happened. And I think you probably liked it less than I did, just based on like when this ended, I was like, that's interesting. But the more I thought about it, the more confused I am about it. Doesn't seem to honor, like, one of the things we raved about with Euphoria is how it honored the experiences of the sort of marginalized people in the show.
Yep.
And if anyone is marginalized in this film, it is Marie. And like,
maybe.
Well, the thing is, I don't like. Is this movie sexist?
I don't think so, but I could see how I certainly could see how it'd be read that way.
He's,
and if that's like, how you read it, I don't blame you.
Well, I don't know how I read it. Like, the Malcolm is pretty abusive, verbally speaking. Like, he's pretty awful. It's
Marie kind of is at times too, right? They're both really mean to each other.
They're both mean, and Marie says some mean things, but not like there's a level difference, isn't there? Isn't the level of mean that Malcolm takes it to pretty much obviously more extreme than where Marie does? It's the difference between, like, why don't you go kill yourself, and I think your movie has some flaws.
I mean, Marie did, like, actively try to make Malcolm think she was going to stab him or herself. Like, it's pretty mean.
That was a 5-second scene where she was making a point about her acting ability. Like, it wasn't an attack.
That was not a 5-second scene. And it was clearly playing on a lot of her past history.
Of course. But again, she was making a point about her acting ability, not just ad hoc attacking her partner. Right?
She did a lot of that too, though, I think. Look, I don't know. I think Malcolm was pretty mean. And I think Marie was pretty mean.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it's uncomfortable to watch. I think interesting is the reaction that they were going for, right? Like, this is like, this just feels a lot like three people, let's make an art project. You know what I mean? Like, look, we're making an art project, and it's a one-room play. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
One room with, I guess, an outdoor set. You know what I mean? And we'll examine a bad relationship, and we'll talk about Hollywood and egos and sex and none of it. It all just disappears up its own ass at the end of the day.
I think that's kind of right.
You know,
I think that's kind of right. At the end of it, what do we know about these people other than that they should probably break up?
I'm not even sure they should break up. That's the sad part.
You're saying they deserve each other?
They might. They might, yeah.
I think, honestly, and this isn't even as big a shot as it might sound like, the best part of this movie was the TikTok I sent you. I did send you the TikTok, right?
With the guy pretending to be their neighbor?
Yes. Yeah. If you watch this movie and you're confused and didn't love it, I recommend seeking out the TikTok where the guy pretends to be their neighbors, because that, I think in a way, that encapsulates how the audience feels watching this movie. Like, the overwhelming feeling watching these two people savage each other verbally is, should someone call the cops? Right? Like, that's, do we need a professional here? Like, what?
Yeah.
This seems dangerous for everyone involved. It makes you, it's tough with a movie like this. Because you have no basis for understanding the foundation of the relationship.
Yeah. But I would also say there's so much shit going on outside of that, right? Like, it's clearly Levinson working out his feelings about critics.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
And Hollywood and race and all of this stuff. And it's all supposed to feel profound. But it definitely feels like sophomore year college students getting stoned and trying to talk deep. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it totally does. And I think it's not just, based on everything I've seen about it, it's not just Sam Levinson, it's Zendaya as well. And that's why the sexism aspect is, I don't think I do want to call this sexist, but there were moments where I was like, I guess Zendaya said that was cool, so I guess I need to feel like it's cool, but I don't know if it is.
Yeah, you do feel like nothing happened in this without her signing off on it. I just totally.
Did you watch any of the like little making of bits?
No,
because she says that, you know, she says like she basically says like I feel like I got to be an equal artist in creating this, you know.
Yes,
and that's great. And I think that does jive with our understanding of Sam Levinson and what he's doing as a filmmaker, is making sure his films honor the experience of the people within them. And he always seems to be open to collaborating with the actors that work with him. So I support that. And if this is what came out of that, I guess I can't complain. I'm just surprised that this is what came out of that.
Yeah. Look, this is not, it's not the end of the world. You know what I mean?
No, I don't think it's bad. Yeah. You may have thought it was bad. I didn't think it was bad. I do think it's a little confusing, and I don't think it's particularly good either, but it is interesting in its own way. And I'll say this, Sam Levinson, you know, whether it's the DPs he's working with or it's primarily him, is visually, this is another, the best part of this is how it looks.
Oh, see, I really felt like the black and white was completely unnecessary.
Really? I thought it was really well shot. Yeah. I thought some of the, it was a little weird.
I agree with you about the shot composition.
Yeah.
Part, like, I think, you know, I'm not saying it doesn't look good, because I do think that it's framed well visually. But it would have looked just as good in color. That's all I'm saying. You're right. Like the black Maybe. And white is a device meant to just, it's basically just to suggest a certain kind of movie making.
Is it? Know? I thought, That's, I kind yeah. of read the black and white as a device to say, this is a conversation. Like, this is less.
That's kind of what I mean, right?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Like, I mean, I think we see
like
that more or less the same way.
70s movie making here, guys, you know?
Yeah. Yeah,
and it's fine. This is the moody B side, right? This is like when Coldplay makes like the real quiet record that like is real serious. You know what I mean?
Do you have an example?
Like those stories? Yeah, yeah. Okay. You know? Uh-huh. Like here's our Gwyneth divorce album. Don't worry, we'll go back to being pop Coldplay in a minute. You know, like
feel this.
This is.
First. Yeah. Feel this.
Feel this. Yeah. Yeah. They should have called it Feel This.
Yeah. No, I think that's right. I think we're more or less on the same page here.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. All right, let's jump into Mr. Mayor, because in the interest of trying to keep to our short show here. I don't have, a ton to
How many
say
did
about
you
this.
Watch?
Quite a few.
Yeah. Let me just – I want to just do a quick experiment. Can I do a quick experiment?
Yeah, hit me.
Jaden Kuipis. Huh, okay. There it is.
Yep.
If you had said Jaden Kuipis, I would have laughed out loud. Because, look, you're right. This is a network sitcom. I will say I think it's funnier than the average network sitcom. Like for
yes.
me.
It's an above-average network sitcom. That is
yeah.
Exactly
what it is. And it's not great. But I got to say, I've never been a huge Bobby Moynihan fan, and I think he is the absolute saving grace of this show.
Interesting.
I just think that character is so damn funny. His asides about his sad life make me giggle. And while I'm not going to tell anyone that, like, we got another great network sitcom, you know, in the tradition of The Good Place or whatever – I think this is funnier than most network sitcoms. Ted Danson is Ted Danson, and that's hard not to love. Holly Hunter. Exactly. Yeah. And Bobby Moynihan is just hilarious, I think. I think he's just hilarious. The name is hilarious. His like childish behavior is hilarious. The whole did you see the bit with their drive to Sacramento and his 70 questions to make you fall in love with someone?
Oh no, that I did not. I don't think that was the last episode I got to. He was like packing for Sacramento, and I don't think I finished it.
I mean, look, it's a little bit dumb. It's not going to blow your mind, but like this was decent candy for me.
Yeah, yeah. Like I don't. I can also see a reality, right? Like if you think about like first season Parks and Rec.
Yep.
You know, where like the show takes a little bit to sort of find its characters and it sort of really clicks in at some point.
Totally.
And actually does become good. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but there's enough pieces there for it to happen.
Yeah.
But I it's not quite all there yet. I do sort of like that it's really got its kind of claws into California wokeness, which is not a thing that you see as the subject of fun a whole lot. You know what I mean?
No, and it's funny.
I think it gets some of the idiosyncrasies of L.A. pretty well.
Come on, the helmet chair? That's funny.
It's pretty good.
Like, and here's the thing. I saw lice coming from a mile away with the helmet chair idea, and I still laughed.
All right. So yeah, you liked it a little bit more than I did, but I don't have it. It's the one thing I don't really have anything bad to say about this week. That's what I'll say.
Yeah, look, it's a mileage may vary situation, and again, no one's saying that's a mind blower, but I did laugh a pretty good amount, and I enjoyed myself watching it.
Yeah, and I would say I found it at times charming.
There you go.
You know what I really liked? The Chrissy Teigen.
Oh my gosh. She was so
spiel of the closing credits.
Yeah. Well, she had two great scenes where she's been. They've already had in the first few episodes a few different celebrity cameos playing like a horrible version of themselves, and I really enjoy. I always enjoy.
Yeah,
that.
Spade was pretty good too.
Yeah,
it was one of the funnier Spade things I've seen in a while.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm always down for famous people to make fun of themselves. Like, that's
Agreed.
My favorite kind of famous people content.
Agreed. I was going to let you brush my hair.
And Chrissy Teigen, by the way, like, especially, like, the woman's been through a lot and regularly comes under fire for being, like, the elite
herself.
And tweeting about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, I just think her choosing to do a sort of absurdized version of her own of the things that people criticize about her, it's a cool choice.
Yeah, I'm all about Chrissy Teigen. 100% for Chrissy Teigen.
No, we are. This is a pro Chrissy Teigen podcast. I believe we're on the record. My family owns Chrissy Teigen cookware. Okay, so that's where I'm at.
Oh wow, yeah. Okay, you're taking it to another level.
Yeah, I mean, she makes a good pan, dude. She makes a really good pan.
all right. On that note,
we used that pan Sunday to make a homemade queso for the Super Bowl, and it was delicious.
Yeah. Buy some Chrissy Teigen. That's your homework. Buy some Chrissy Teigen cookware.
I have nothing but positive reviews. Yeah.
Where do you buy Chrissy Teigen cookware? Is that, do you go direct or do you get it in a store?
The internet. Yeah. Use the internet.
The internet. Okay. All right. So for actual homework this week, if you don't have the money to go get Chrissy Teigen cookware.
Before we do homework, do we want to say anything about the Super Bowl?
No.
Okay.
Did you have some thoughts? I found it to be a thoroughly unpleasant experience from start to finish.
Yeah, it was one of the most disappointing Super Bowls of all time. I hate that it wasn't competitive. I hate that Patrick Mahomes never had a chance to do anything, and it sucked. Yep.
Yeah, no, it wasn't fun.
Okay, I feel like we covered that.
Weekend. Thoroughly average.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah, like if you like The Weeknd, that's cool, and you could have just listened to those songs on your iPhone later on.
Yeah.
Nothing. I mean, other than the now memed gif of him wandering through a lighted hallway, I'm not sure anyone got anything out of that.
He needs to go to dance camp. You know what I mean?
Like, I guess
the guy who makes that music should be able to throw down some dance. You know what I'm saying?
Maybe.
And
but
it was
I,
sorely missing from that. From that
I point. Totally agree that the lack of dancing was a problem, but I also feel like that's not his. He's not Chris Brown or Usher. He's a balladeer. You know? I think the choice is just weird. I'm not sure
Maybe
like
that's it.
The chillest
Maybe that's it.
I don't know that the chillest R&B balladeer in the world is a good halftime choice for the Super Bowl.
That might be it. You're right.
Like what defines what our friend our friend Abel is defined by being super chill all the time.
Right. So then you got to I don't know. Look, I mean, obviously they tried with the stage setting and stuff, but it's just
and
it's a little weird, right?
Yeah, apparently they made him spend his own money on that stage, too, which is absurd.
Yeah, I guess. People are like, I feel bad for him. It's like, 90 million people watch that. Like, he's going to make the money back.
No, no, no. Hold on. I do not feel bad for him. Nobody puts $7 million down.
People have told me they feel bad for him.
Well, that's dumb. Yeah. Nobody who's struggling drops – it's not like that was his last $7 million. And, he just needed this to work so he could continue his career. Like, I don't feel bad for him. I just think it's dumb.
I also personally have a hard time believing Republic Records didn't pony up something to make that happen personally. But
oh, the record company? Yeah, maybe. But even so, like, NFL, come on, Doc. Come on, guys.
They never pay for that reason.
That's dumb. Pay for the set.
You know? I don't know why that's sort of, like, only becoming public now. But, like, they didn't pay Beyonce.
Yeah, that's weird. I did not know that.
Like, I sort of feel like if they don't pay Beyonce, that's all I got to say is like, look, we didn't pay Beyonce. And everybody goes, oh, okay.
No, that's true. If you don't pay Beyonce, you don't have to pay anybody. That's definitely how that works.
Right. She did it twice.
All right. Anyway, homework.
Homework is Framing Britney Spears, which is a New York Times made documentary on Hulu. It's like an hour 15-ish.
And I've been given a personal guarantee by you that there is zero deepfake technology in this documentary.
that is correct. There's zero deepfake technology in this. I understand the temptation to use it. I think it'll surprise you a little bit.
Okay.
Like, as a person who lived through all of this, there were things that I did not remember, and things that look different in the current context of our world about her story.
Yeah.
And it's just an interesting story, frankly.
Okay.
So yeah, check it out. And then there's a new To All the Boys movie.
Yeah, baby.
To be a palate cleanser. I wonder how many of these they're going to make.
I'm going to have to watch that after the Britney, for sure. Britney first, and then to feel better about the world, To All the Boys I've loved before. What is this one? Always and Forever?
Always and Forever, yeah.
I feel like this is it. I feel like
they're making these movies.
No. I feel like this is a tight trilogy, you know? I feel like we're done here. And Lana Condor can move on to bigger and better things.
I think the word tight's already gone out the window. and then finally, Judas and the Black Messiah, which you've probably seen a bunch of ads for, it, you know, would be out in theaters, but instead it'll be on your HBO Max, and I ain't mad.
Yeah. No, I'm not upset about that either. I have high expectations here. I do.
Yeah, me too.
Daniel
me too.
Kaluuya, it looks great. The story is fascinating, and it's a story that a few other things we've watched have danced around, right, in the last year or so. So it's a story that's
And our girl from The Deuce getting some run there.
Yeah, and a story that's been on the periphery of the things we've been watching. I'm very excited about this. And not to put too fine a point on it or give – anyone too much credit, but the sort of black stories that haven't been told throughout my lifetime, and it's nice to see movies being made about them now.
Yeah, a lot of them getting told now.
Yep.
And I'm not complaining about that. It's been a good year for black cinema. So, all right, I think that's it for now. Right? Did we do a short show?
We did it, man. We're under 40 minutes. I'm so proud of us. I appreciate you doing this for me, and I was happy to do it for you.
I was going to say, I was equally generous and selfish at the same time. Kind of like Malcolm and Marie.
okay, bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling, and the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.